Hello and welcome to episode 56 of the QDR Crusaders for Tuesday, July 30th, 2013. Welcome back, guys. We've got quite the episode for you this week. My name is Rainbow Plasma. I'm the organizer and editor of this podcast, and today I'm joined by...
Burn2One, specialist coordinator and also an editor.
And I'm PhotoGuy317, and I am the art coordinator.
Pinky Dash is not in today because he, slept in. We just haven't seen him.
He's MIA. We have no idea where he is.
So he's missing in action. Maybe he'll pop in halfway through. We'll see about that. But this is the crew we're running today. And we've got something really awesome for you guys. Because we have got two special guests. You might have seen their little short that came out recently, which was called Children of the Night. I'd like to introduce Richard Lionheart Cartoon Sirwa. Is that how I say the last name? Sirwa?
Yeah, in English, that's how it sounds. Yeah.
And Jordana Spirit, a.k.a. Spirit Gonzalez.
Andale. Hello, guys.
And so before we get into anything, we're going to do what we did last time we had you guys on the show, which is show your wonderful short. So
in case you haven't seen.
Without further ado, in case you haven't seen this short, here it is. Enjoy.
Get excited.
Yay.
I still remember it like it was yesterday, though it was countless moons ago. After he was defeated, not much of our once beautiful home was left. And the two brave ones that stood up for us all ruled Equestria from then on. One day, the younger one, saddened by our daily struggles, proposed to form a new colony where all of us would grow strong and happy. But the elder one forbade it, for she felt that it would divide and shatter the weakened kingdom forever. No pony knows that we are still here, smiling beneath the moonlight while remembering our dear mother, for we will forever be her children of the night.
Enchantment. Come little children, the time's come to play here in my garden of shadows. Follow sweet children, I'll show thee the way through all the pain and the sorrow. Shadows.
And we're back. So that was Children of the Night, made by both of you lovely people.
Thank you.
So first of all, I mean, it was spectacular.
Oh, yeah.
I think that I can speak for everyone here and everyone watching when I say that it was just amazing, and it was worth every bit of waiting.
We hear that a lot, yes. Thank you. I mean, it was a huge effort from start to finish. It barely even didn't get done. After a while, you just got to roll with it. Mm-hmm. You're so near to the end, you don't want to trip at the finish line.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I know that it's been a very long wait. We want to thank everybody who supported the project since the very beginning, starting by you guys. And I am very proud that we managed to finish this. And there was a lot to learn, a lot to test. And it's been a tough road, but we have arrived. That's mm-hmm. what counts.
Yay.
Yeah.
We came out the other end. We can definitely say that.
Yeah, it was definitely it was definitely really great. And I mean, this is like top of the fandom stuff, and it was definitely worth the wait. I know that we had you on the show, this 56, so almost exactly a year ago. We had you on our third episode when we were talking about your animatic, and it's just amazing to see how far it came and how well it came out in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm very, very glad that you liked the video so much. My super relief in the moment of the release is that people started to say it was worth the wait. I was dying until I heard that.
Well, it was a gamble.
Yeah,
worth every moment for the entire year.
Yeah,
it was a gamble. You never know. We didn't even know the release date until like a few hours before. We did say this last year. We were so excited to have something on our plate and, you know, have that project for both our portfolio and for the fandom. And then suddenly, well, we don't know when it's going to come out. And a few hours before, it's like, oh, well, the next post on our blog is going to be the video. Suddenly, just like that. It's like, yes, we just realized that we're done now. Mm-hmm. There was just so much to do. It was crazy. We got so much stuff in between, including the Brony documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Which cut off a bit of time from the production of Children of the Night, but in the end, it made me realize several things, including some that were, well, how can I just present what I have to the fandom like that? It's not only is it not something that I can do, but something that I can do better.
Mm.
What made me think that it was just good enough? I kind of put on my pants and kicked my own butt and decided, let's go and redo what I don't think should be shown. I wanted to show something good, and I worked on it. I didn't work on it every day, like I probably should have, but I mean, I'm human. I've got to eat, I've got to do some stuff, and I don't always have energy to work on it either. Every day, 24/7, it's not possible, not the amount of work that it requires. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm sorry for everybody who waited so long.
I mean, just as a quick thing, because we might have some new viewers in because of this interview, but you know, if people want to know what you guys did individually, I know you have a little thing up on the end of the video, a little slate that Bernd can hopefully put up on the screen here, explaining what you do. But to people, do you want to just explain, you know, what your role in the project was for both of you?
Shall I start?
Go right ahead.
Okay.
Yes.
We divided the project in several phases, and we collaborated together to get them done most of the time. However, animation was mostly done by Richard here, because I have not been trained ever to perform animation, much the less at that level, at the level we wanted to. So I only could assist him in that aspect in small things, like, for example, the children tales, or some special effects that are along the film, and also in post-production. The division was, we made the storyboards, and I was leading the storyboards at the beginning. Then Richard edited the animatic most of the time. Then we started background phase, and a style exploration phase, in which I lead it again. In that case, when there was a picture with a very complex perspective in which Richard is very strong, he made the layout first, and then I painted everything. There are many backgrounds, especially in the flying sequence, in which I painted the 100% of the total. But there are others like Canterlot Towers, like the Castle Views, in which I got Richard's help. Then we started the animation phase, the animation, and we started without puppets. That was a huge mistake. The technique that we used was build per shot, in which we build the ponies specifically for the shot given. And in this case, for an animation that it's more than 10 seconds long, it's a very bad approach.
Yeah.
So at some point in the production, we realized that, and I started making the puppets. He had, through all the build per shots, and he made a prototype of Luna already. So we both working on that. And then I made the 12 children myself. After that, Lion started animating the whole thing. From top to from beginning to end, and in the meanwhile, while he finished shots, we both started tinkering it with After Effects to give all that atmospheric effect, all that feeling, all that general color that holds it together. Mm. And I took care of it for most part at the end. That's the division. As you see, it's not a perfect division. We did most of it together. And whenever there was an area in which one of us was stronger than the other, the strongest one led it.
Well, I think that was a really good description for both of you. I'm not sure what you're gonna say, Line, but.
Well, I mean, I didn't animate 100% of everything. She did the intro all by herself. She needed someone to feel like she was doing a bit more. Ever since the background paintings were done, the whole project was like led along by. Just me. I was the only one with work still left to do. So she felt she needed something to do, and well, she did so much already. I didn't know why she felt that way. However, she animated the intro all by herself, and well, that helped me a lot, kinda. Some shots were just so huge, I just couldn't see the end of the tunnel. It was tough. But, I mean, I wanted to do this so bad at one point, it's just. Even if I was running on empty for so long, I didn't see anything gone. It's I like that project. I really like it a lot. However, there's been bumps on the road everywhere. It wasn't easy.
Yeah, it's a hard project.
At all.
Yeah, we made a postmortem this morning. A postmortem is something that you do in the video game industry, and it's an evaluation of the project. And we concluded that if we had had the assets from the beginning, this will be so much easier. If we wanted to do Children of the Night or something similar again, we will know now where to make changes, and we will probably finish a lot faster.
Mm-hmm. Probably, yes. I mean, it was our first project of that scope at all. So we thought that by creating what we needed as we needed it was the best possible approach because, well, we didn't work on anything like that before. And once we realized, well, we don't have any foals. Well, we don't know what we're going to need in terms of foals. So what should we do? Just wait or create everything? And in the middle of it all, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, we need the foals now. So let's do a turnaround. Let's put all those little symbols together. And before I knew it, we had like 12 foals already to put into the main timeline.
Hmm.
And Luna was already pretty well along. However, there were still a few symbols that were wonky. Some of the very first shots I did were her face was moving every which way. It's like the muzzle wasn't even following the nostrils, and the eyes were just popping back and forth. And once I realized that, I was what? I thought that was okay, and I went back and redid all of that. Like I think it was between February and April, right after the documentary. I just went, okay, I know more about Flash now, and I just can't let it go like that. I'm gonna do it better. And, well, the final result is what everybody has seen. It's her character that holds itself a lot more. More acting, more mouth shapes. Well, everything got pushed, especially that huge solo where she's in front of the moon. She just starts singing and then flies up into the sky. That was one of the shot that I wanted to animate the most. And once I did the first pass on it, so I think it was like a year ago easily, I rewatched it earlier this year, and it's not gonna work. Her face was moving everywhere. It was just horrible. I don't know what got into me to just say, well, that's good enough. It's not good enough. Well, when you want to have something to your portfolio or, you know, to show what you can do, it's not good enough. I paid the price for, you know, trying to be lazy like every animator wants to be, but after a while, just realize you've got to do things like they have to be done.
But yeah. Darling, there, I know exactly what got into you. When you made those shots, you didn't have the build of Luna, and you had to do the symbols per shot.
I had a basic build, but yeah, there was still a lot of stuff missing.
Yeah, but a basic build doesn't cover a 180 degrees, that's the problem. Mm-hmm.
No, we had a like a side view and perhaps a three-quarter view, and that was about it at the time. Mm-hmm. So I can't imagine how else it would have worked with like other shots where she's seen from the back. Now, you definitely need puppets to work on it, or at least something that's half a turnaround with 8 turn points. The front, 3/4, you know, and all of the in-betweens that goes with it. Otherwise, you're going to have a very hard time trying to figure out what goes where. Flash is not at all like traditional animation or hand-drawn animation. While you can see the drawing in your head and know just what goes where, when you have a puppet in Flash, it's basically just a little puzzle that you have to put together in order to make it work. And, well, my mindset was not at all working like that. At least not at the time, anyway. Mm-hmm. So I had a huge problem just getting through my thick skull that it's not hand-drawn animation anymore. Even if there are some shots that are hand-drawn in there. Those that can find it, well, you're good.
Well, I mean, that was part of the whole point of the project, was to learn more about animating and to increase your skill, was it not?
Well, yeah, in a sense, I do have traditional training in animation. I just never was able to put it up, say, at the level that I used for this video. Mm-hmm. Traditionally trained, yes, but when you work in video games, all you do are little characters that jump, crouch, slide, run, die. You don't have much to show afterwards. It's basically the same thing, just in a different flavor. Whereas now, I can definitely, well, we could definitely show what we were able to do, and we're kind of glad to have done that now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, most that you do in gaming is cycles, and only cycles. And all of a sudden, when you are in a project such as this, you have a character which is cycling, maybe, which is galloping, but he's acting at the same time. So cycling is not enough anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't just do loops now. You have to do a whole bunch of acting with it, and that's where your character basically comes alive. You need that.
Mm-hmm. Well, because you guys have like worked in Flash before for other projects, but I guess not on this level or this scale, right?
Never.
Flash for video game is not the same at all.
Yeah.
No, it's absolutely different. When you are working in Flash for video gaming, you have your biggest concern is not the flow of animation. Your biggest concern is optimization of that animation. The game has to load fast, and it has to look good. So you might do any trick you can to make the animation look good, cheat as the hell. You might, but the animation has to be under 3 kilobytes sometimes. So that's the point of Flash gaming. Besides, in Flash, in any gaming media, you are going to have your task is making cycles. You are going to have a character running at the best of times, maybe rolling, doing some special move. That's that. We are talking about very limited animation. And then on an animation like My Little Pony, the ponies have facial expression, acting, and they have to move like horses, and believably as horses. You have angle changes, thing that you don't usually get in video games, at least not the Flash ones. And you have all sorts of stuff that we were not used to think about.
The principles are the same. It's just the mindset that's different in order to get something to move the way like you want it to.
Right. I mean, if you think about, like, there's something that I noticed the most, which is, because obviously you guys chose a similar to show style. It obviously came out quite differently, I'm sure we'll talk later about your Disney influences and other things like that and older cartoons, but one of the things that stood out to me the most was just how fluid a lot of the transitions for the facial expressions, because as you know, My Little Pony is known mostly, I mean, it's affected by the facial expressions, and that's what everyone relates to, that's what everyone looks to. And there's something in there that I've never seen anyone else do, not to mention do as well as you did, which is a transition from a side shot to like a three-quarter and a front shot completely smoothly in animation. And I mean, I'm sure I just haven't seen something like that before. So that was really incredible to me that you kind of took something that you have a reference for with the show, and then you really worked and you improved on it in a way that I didn't think could be done smoothly.
You mean outside of the snaps that usually happen in the show, right?
Right, exactly.
Because, when you animate a character, say, hand-drawn, you normally have that little chip in your head that tells you what the character's head will look like, up, down, side, up, lower angle, up, you know, camera down, and everything. I see that in my head. I'm used to drawing those kind of things. However, in Flash, like I said, you don't necessarily have the symbols to make it look that way. And making a transition as smooth as that requires either a lot of symbols or a lot of cheating. I did a bit of both, because as much as in my head I know what it's supposed to look like, it drove me mad not to be able to reproduce the same thing using the symbols that were available. And even making a new symbol doesn't mean it's going to translate well to the next frame, say, from the side shot to the three quarter to then the full front. Everything is different in there. The muscles aren't at the same place. The nostrils tend to disappear and reappear depending on where you are. And then there's an eye that's going to be hidden behind the muzzle, and then it's going to be in front, or, you know, both will have to be behind. It's all those things you have to think in terms of layers and different symbols that you don't necessarily have to think about when you're just drawing the thing. So making that was one of the biggest challenge of that video, making those transitions, not only the face but the body as well. Everything has to move in relation to the rest, and giving it that volume is very difficult. You're treating 2D symbols / drawings or your character and trying to give them the volume that they should have, that you see in your head, and that makes sense, all using those little parts. That's something, you know, the show does it well, but for the song that we had, it called for something a bit stretched out. You needed something that wasn't as snappy. At first, it was real, real flashy. I didn't have a lot of symbols for that, which is why I went back. But that's challenging. Probably the guy in the show could do it, but, you know, scheduled time and deadlines and all of that probably prevents them from going that very same way.
Yeah, because I can imagine with the show in particular, they have to reuse a lot of the assets, and they don't have much time to build new symbols and stuff because of time constraints. But with you guys, because you were really pushing the limits of, you know, what you could do on this animation, it came out really well.
Thank you so much.
It's,
with all the transitions.
Yeah, it's no doubt those guys could be able to do the same. However, I was not about to turn that thing into like a Duke Nukem Forever and forever push the deadline away. No, it's not. That's not what I wanted.
But the idea of the project was pushing Flash as hard as we could.
And we broke it.
And we broke it several times. You wouldn't believe the extensions that we have to add to our Flash to make this work. And it's been a little bit controversial because some people have been displeased about the, I'm quoting with my fingers, 3D looking of the short film. But the thing is that we took this as from a standard classical hand-drawn animation point of view. So we tried, okay, this is how we see it in our heads for our traditional animation training. We want something close to this. Can we push Flash to do something like this? And we succeeded to some degree to make it look like we visualized in our heads. However, we understand now more than ever why the production choices of the show are what they are.
Because you can see what the limitations are.
Definitely, yes. You hide those limitations by using those little snappy movements. I mean, it's the same with the Muppet Show. Most puppets would like look slightly down and then turn their heads and then bring their head back up again, just to hide the fact that their hands, and they have very limited anchor points and, you know, articulations. They're going to use that little move to give some kind of a fluidity that you would normally get. So they do the same in the show, and that's something that we just couldn't use, not for our purposes anyway.
There's like a little example. Imagine Luna holding a note into the Garden of Shadows. Usually, you make a snap at the beginning of Sha, and you set a head position. you might move that head a little bit, maybe for making the note shake or something like that, and then you are going to make a heavy neck movement and make it snap back into another angle so she can continue whatever she's doing. She can go on to the next verse or cut the shot or whatever. Instead of that, we decided to transition very smoothly and give her one flowy movement through all that note. That's the basic difference.
Right.
The show applies the principles used in Muppet shows, and we try to approach it from hand-drawn animation.
It's an interesting parallel there, because they both use puppets, and so it would make sense that they you would have to use the same kind of limitations that they would...
Well, of course, it's the same technique. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It works well for everyone, yeah.
When Luna changes angle in the shot, it does it in a very snappy way. If you observe the muscle, it's like, but you don't feel, yeah, it's like she's frontal and all of a sudden her head is this little egg, it's oval, and all of a sudden, fuck, there's a square that appears out of nowhere, and you believe it. Why? Because she is moving that head, snapping it, moving the neck, and guiding the movement, so you don't pay too attention to the muscle anymore.
Mm.
That's why it's working.
Right.
It's puppeteering.
Right. It might not be perfectly realistic, but then again, look at the material that you're using. And so.
Talking pony.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you are excused for making it look better, even if it might not be super realistic.
Thanks.
That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Especially with the limitations of the programs. So now you guys mentioned you used After Effects and Flash.
We used everything.
How did
everything.
You use those together?
Yeah, tons of programs that got into the production of this thing. Like I said, some parts of the video were made hand-drawn, basically because Flash couldn't provide what I needed. The most notable are probably some of Luna's wings. When she flies very close to the camera or something, there's a slightly more flowy movement than you would get using Flash. I still have, a loop of wing flaps that are ready. I even have those wings spread out with the feathers all individually anchored to the wing so that I could get that very subtle movement. But which shot is it? When Moondancer, the white filly, just goes around Luna, all of her wings on that shot have been animated by hand and then colored and then put back into Flash or After Effects, depending. Even that other shot where she just comes back up over the cloud, her wings spread out, and then she just glides down. All of those wings were made hand-drawn, just because, making one symbol or one frame for this in Flash was way harder, especially to get a nice line, like I wanted it to, in vector form, so I basically just animated it into another program and put it back in.
Yeah, I mean, the level of detail is quite spectacular, and I'm kind of scrolling through the video as we're talking to kind of get reference points. When Luna leans down and nuzzles Moondancer, is it? Yeah. When she does that, she stops to glide for a second, and if you could just attempt to show, like, you can see all of the feathers in the wings just subtly, like, moving, and I think that, that attention to detail when she's gliding is just, it's spectacular to me, because it's something that not a lot of people would notice, and I really would like to point that out, because I imagine that you spent quite a bit of time on it.
Well, at one point, I wasn't sure if I was going to do this, but seeing some movies and getting some reference, I went, it could definitely help a lot. So I went slightly out of my way just to make those wings like that. Even in one of the early shots where she's overlooking the city, just before the huge tower dive, I remade those wings to have the feathers individually attached, just so it would get that little snap at the end. It's I do believe it was one of my posts in the blog, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's once those were done, all the feathers were existing, so I could only retake the symbol, hence saving time, and if you're in the studio, save money, and, put it over there, and suddenly you have a whole new symbol that you can make out of another set of symbols. It's, like I said, it's the kind of mindset, remembering what you did to reuse it later, and then save time. That's the hard part, always remembering what you did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'd imagine that, when you're animating, I guess mostly in Flash or in digital animation programs, that reusing assets is, or managing your assets is probably one of the hardest parts. Just to kind of keep track of what you've done already and what you can use.
Yeah, that's the problem. One of the issues we had was reusable assets, precisely. For example, the wings that you mentioned the ones that in which the feather moves. We wanted to do that for shot 29, in which the falls are getting out of control for following Luna. In that shot, we got a glide. We are aware of that, and I'm terribly sorry, because that was one of the effects that I was supposed to animate. But when I tried to import the wing that had those feathers on, it wasn't on the same angle. That's why what happens when you have a character that rotates so much. I couldn't make a new wing. I didn't have time. And I was working at 40 degrees Celsius, so I'm terribly sorry, guys, but I never... those are not work conditions, and this was never, ever ending. That's one example of one asset that we wanted to reuse, and we couldn't, because we were thinking traditional animation all the time. Other assets, however, we were very, very lucky, like the tails of the falls, and we could reuse them.
Yeah, what she made was a very valid point. It's the angles at which some of the symbols have been made into. That's the extent of the reusability. Unless you have the same angles reused all the time, those symbols become very valuable. Whereas if you have only one angle and you use something only once, well, the chances are for you to be able to reuse it are very slim. Hence, you either waste time or you do something in something else, like, you know, again, hand-drawn. So that's the problem. If you have Luna on the back, or say, 3/8 back, and you only use that once, all of the symbols you made for that, they can be reused, but if you don't need them, it becomes harder. Managing is very important, but it's also very difficult. You never really know what you're going to need.
Yep. You tell me. I made those deals, and I was praying all the time that they will work. And we had one problem of reusability with Luna. All my fault.
Why?
The shoes. Do you remember?
Oh yeah, the horseshoes. Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, those were needed in several angles, but it's not always easy to determine which angles you're going to need all the time again. So I did the best I could with the parts that I had and created those that I need. But it's sometimes there are going to be a little bit of jitter. It's not noticeable that much, but you know I know where to look, so it kind of pisses me off at some point because I need to move ahead. You can't just spend forever on the same shot. You have to move ahead. Otherwise, you just get bogged down. You don't know. You feel bad. You want to do something else. You're just tired. And, well, you know, you have to move on eventually, which is why some shots, like that one where she just glides into the back, it took so long to make. And at the same time, you can't just spend forever on this. Otherwise, you feel like you're not doing anything. And you wonder what you're doing. And, well, you just, okay, let's go, move into something else. If you can, go back to it, but still keep the project moving forward. Keep that motivation going. Just keep doing. Something new is much better to the morale than just a standstill. When you're at a stalemate, that's probably a bad thing. Leave it there, move on, and keep yourself organized. That's probably the best way to go about it.
Besides, it's not only animating. It's also the post-production, which is another... a story, and it's not a pretty one. For example, in I know it because I had to make entire shots for the intro. You know, I made a lot of bloopers in the animation, and I'm very sorry for the lip sync. Yeah, I'm here basically to say that I'm sorry. I need more training and working on that precisely right now. But to the point is that when I made Gary talking into that cave, my first pass of animation was, of course, the action of Gary. Then I thought, okay, I can go into After Effects now. No, I have to animate the quill. Okay, I animated the quill. Oh, the quill is not enough. I have to animate the text being written. Then, okay, I can go into After Effects. No, I forgot the flame. Then all over again with the flame. Anything else? I forgot the cloth. Yeah, it was like that. It was like 5 or 6 times. Okay, I'm ready to go. No, I forget this. Then you have to export the animations individually into one layer of PNGs. You have Gary, into another layer you have the quill, into another you have the text, into another you have the flame, and you have to apply animation into After Effects. For example, the candle that you see in that intro, it's glowing, and the light is being animated in the atmosphere as well as the flame. So it's never ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing some people don't realize, that in animation you have to create everything from the lighting to the environment to the sounds that are being put in. It's like you start from scratch. It's like, then there was like click, okay, and then there was air, and you know, you have to put down all of the atmosphere depending on where the
camera is. It's an entire video production.
You start from the ground up.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of people who watch videos, who watch animations, don't realize the amount of work that goes into, like, especially like light sources specifically.
Absolutely.
Because you have to like the reflective light on objects and all the, like, if you have water or liquids, refraction and stuff, it's kind of a lot of work.
It kind of is, yeah.
A lot of work. Especially the way that we did it, when there's a light on it over the, a candle flame has an emission over the candle level, then there's a halo of light that has to be animated. Even more than that, there is a global illumination that has to go up and down, to make that seem believable to be lit by a candle.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of the old candlelight shots where there were candles, there were probably three or four different versions of that background. One with, say, one candle out, one with both candles out, one with all candles on, and all of that flickered as the candle was still lit, and then suddenly the candle flickers out. So you have to fade that out to the other background, which had only like one candle going, and then, you know, and so on and so forth. So every one of those little instances required a different treatment or a different background.
Not to mention
altogether,
that you have to adjust the color keys in the very beginning to know beforehand if those candles are going to work.
So that was a little bit of the world of animation, but I would like to talk about the world that you've created, because you have quite the story, and I know you've gone over it last time we did a little interview with you, and you did a great job. And people should definitely, if people are just seeing this for the first time and they haven't seen our old episode, I believe it's episode 3 of the Q-Dark Crusaders, where we interviewed you guys not right after. Anyways, sometime around the animatic when we interviewed you, you talked to us in great depths about the story. But I'd like to kind of bring that up again, because a lot of people, I'm sure, have questions about the story. There's a lot of comments on your page about things that might not be true. So do you want to kind of clear that up and tell people a little bit about the story that you've kind of created here?
Well, of course, the first thing that I would like, I'm very glad that you make this question, because people seem to be confused about the story. Some people don't get it. Well, one of the premises of this story is that you don't have to get anything. There's a lot of room for your imagination to fill the gaps, to fill the information that you don't have. And there's a lot of interpretations. Every viewer can get themselves their own idea and their own feeling. Sometimes it's good and they like the video, sometimes it's bad and they dislike it, but such is life. The story is based on the classical fairy tales, so it's a little bit dark, but it's not gory or based on death or nothing so grimsome as that. It's innocent in his creepiness. Well, that's a way of saying it. If you look at other fairy tales like Peter Pan, there are children that are being taken away from their homes. And you also have the Pied Piper of Hamelin, which is a very dark story. Yet, children are being told that story nowadays, anyway. Mm-hmm. And there are tons of examples. The original song also gives a creepy atmosphere, because it was used in the original movie, Hocus Pocus, for what it was used, to lure children into their doom. So that's probably one of the reasons for which people are thinking that the children are going to get calm in some way. That's not the reality of it. Mm-hmm. The story, it's about the descent of Luna into Nightmare Moon. So, as Gary starts telling the story in the intro, and you have to pay a lot of attention to the whole video to catch everything that is going on. One of my favorite movies is Spirited Away, and I love that movie because I don't understand it completely. Every time I watch it, I find out something new that changes my interpretation, so it's a little bit like seeing it for the first time every time. I try to make that. It's very, very difficult because my short film is very short. Mm, and I try to condense a lot of information in just 1 minute. We start with Gary in a cave, an adult Gary, which is a filly that you see in the video. It's one of the children. And she's telling a story. She's writing the story that she knows on a book. Many people are confused by that and think that it's me talking. It's not me talking, it's Gary. Gary is your narrator, so the story is being told by, from Gary's point of view. Is Gary going to be nice towards Celestia? Probably not. She's going to be nice towards Luna, and she's going to empathize Luna's vision. That's one of the twists that that intro has. And then we know about the story that Luna wanted to make a new colony because after Discord's empire was ended, overthrown, after Discord was overthrown and turned to stone, the land was in a very bad state. After all that chocolate rain and candy clouds, they are very pretty in theory, but that is not very good for soil and for crops. Having sugar in on the earth, you know, and probably who knows what else Discord did. It's chaos. So the land was having trouble to provide for the ponies. And in that intro, pay attention, you see Moon Dancer for the first time. Nobody spotted her yet. She's digging on the ground, looking for grass to eat and not finding anything. That's the first time that Luna comes in contact with Moon Dancer. When she watches her trying to provide for herself. Then we are told that Luna had a brilliant idea to divide the kingdom, to form a new colony where all who were less favorized by this situation will have a chance to grow stronger. While Celestia denied that wish because, like Lincoln said, don't divide a nation. Together we are strong, divided we are weak. So there was the start of Nightmare Moon. If you look at that scene, is Celestia is in upper position. She's, I clarified that on the video. Celestia and Luna rule together, that's right. But there, how many thrones have you guys seen in the Canterlot room? Throne room?
One.
There's only one.
Just
that's
one
because Celestia reigns during the daytime and Luna reigns during the night time. They occupy that throne by turns. And they consult decisions together. It was in a consultation during daytime, probably at evening, that Celestia refused. So Luna took her shift that very night and took the decision, okay, if you are not going to go with this, I think this is the right thing to do, and I'm going to do things my way, dear sister. There's also a plan of sibling rivalry going on there. Older sisters always think they know better. And yes, that's it. I have older sisters and the younger one. I can't tell you that they...
So do I.
Yeah. So if you have an older sister, you can tell a little bit about that. It's not that Celestia is a tyrant or she believes herself better than Luna. Celestia, it's the sovereign of Equestria, but she's also Luna's older sister. There is going to be a little bit of sibling rivalry. So there goes the big sister. The jealousy and the resentment starts to build in Luna, and she takes a very harsh decision. I'm sorry for that. I was saying that Luna took a very harsh decision, that it's summoning whoever pony on Canterlot will follow her to the colony and take them to the colony directly, without knowing exactly where to go or without planning ahead too much. That's the decision of a younger sibling. She's not looking at the consequences of her acts. She's looking only at the short term, that I want to do good for these people, for these ponies, and I want to do it now. And I have been denied, so I'm not going to wait any longer. She was already very resented of Celestia's decision, of how she said her idea was declined. Even if she didn't tell Luna directly, I forbid you to do this, because probably the discussion wasn't like that. But then again, I repeat, Gary is telling the story. So Gary's vision is distorted by Luna.
And for some commenters on YouTube, no, the colony is not on the moon.
Oh, yes. The colony is not the moon, and it's not the Lunar Republic. Well, that's another thing. But then again...
Well, I mean, speaking of comments, I mean, one of the most frequent ones that I saw, especially in the early goings, was people talking about the kidnapping of children, which we know because we talked to you about it over a year ago that that wasn't the case, but evidently, you know, a lot of people haven't seen that. So do you want to just reiterate that, like, it's not, there's no kidnapping going on.
There's no kidnapping. Luna is not forcing or fooling kids into following her. Luna is casting a spell, and you have to observe the video to know that the spell has three effects. Effect number one, everyone in the city is going to fall asleep. Someone asked, why Celestia is passed on the ground? Because it's nighttime, and she needs to sleep at some point. The night guards that are guarding Celestia's chambers are falling asleep when she says shadows. So that's effect number one. Effect number two is that all the lights, all the reminiscences of Celestia are getting, they are being turned down. Mm-hmm. They are being dimmed, yeah. Extinguished. And only her night, her stars and her moon are illuminating this scenery. Effect number three of that spell, calling. That moon ray that you see through the video, it's the magic of the moon that is calling you. And when the children are hit by that, they are being awakened, and they know what they are, the choice they are being presented. Do you want to follow me? This is what I offer. Yes or no? And the children follow. And they are not hypnotized, and they are not fooled. They are following her on their entire own free will. The free will is in the orphanage when they start taking off. They initially have the levitation spell over them, and then that levitation flows inside the children, so they have full control. They could have turned around at any time and back to their beds, but they decide to go all the way with that decision.
Talking about, you know, incredible amounts of detail, it's funny that you should say that just as I passed that part, but you're absolutely right. Like you said, when it starts, they're surrounded by this magic, they're being levitated, and then it changes very noticeably to be a different kind, you know, and then you see that they're taking control of that. It's a level of detail that is incredible to me. I hope that people can see that in the video as it's being shown. But it's you did put that detail into the animation as well, not just implied.
That's the thing. In that very moment of the orphanage, if you are passing it, the children are looking at the window. The doors are closed on that building. So they are communicating with Luna. We cannot go on. We are blocked. We cannot follow you, but we want to. So in that very moment, levitation takes on. Whoa, what's happening here? And all of a sudden, they have control. Just like that, like they were showered in pixie dust. So a little bit like Peter
Something
Pan,
like
they
that, yeah,
decide to go to Neverland with Luna. They decide to follow her on their entire free will. Was that irresponsible from the children? Probably yes. They were children.
Yeah.
But Luna was calling for any pony who will be willing to follow her. It was a matter of random that there were only kids that decided so.
But then again, also, it fits better with a song, so I guess.
Yeah.
We could have shown probably more, you know, adults just opening their eyes and going, like, no, go back to sleep, that kind of stuff. But, I mean, none of the kids actually look hypnotized. I mean, she can put the whole city to sleep and turn down the lights, so it would have prevented her from just grabbing them up, saying, you are under my control, and then, you know, take them away. No,
right, but she
obviously they're not hypnotized in any way.
Mm-hmm, if you observe Moon Dancer, which is on a bed on a house, she's super happy to go after that lunar light to go up because it's the first time in her life she's dancing on air. She's really, really happy because somehow she knows that if I go to this place, I will have a chance to be what I am. Or what I meant to be.
Dancing on the moon.
And I'm going to tell this beforehand. In Canterlot, those children will have never, ever be happy. It was a degraded zone, so they will have had miserable lives anyway.
I mean, you even saw the pony that was hiding underneath the box on the bridge. They're kind of living lives like that.
Yes, they all had problems. The fact that they were orphans or not, it's irrelevant. What is relevant is, okay, which kind of life was awaiting those children? Which kind of future they could expect? Not a very bright one, if a future at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of the scenes that really kind of shows that you know, the children are happy to be following Luna is that whole flying sequence. And one of the things that, like, really stood out to me is when I forget which of the foals kind of went over Moon Luna. Moon Dancer, yeah. And it was just like dancing in the clouds. It's, you know, kind of powerful.
That moment is in which Moni, which is the one which is closest to Luna, is thanking her. Thank you for taking me away. It's not the Stockholm Syndrome. It's not been long enough for that to happen. Luna is not snatching the kids in a big bag and taking them away. Ha ha ha, you are now following me. Ha, ha. No, it's not that.
You will now worship the moon.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely not that. And I remember you talking specifically to some of those points last year. But I'm glad that we can kind of get it out to people now that the video is out. That it's most definitely not stealing people away. It's inviting them away and helping them in a way. Obviously, there's two sides to every story, and Celestia and those who follow her would probably see it a little bit differently.
Well,
but like you said,
there is no black or white. In this story, there is all gray. Mm-hmm. If you look at this story from Celestia's point of view, Luna is a very bad guy. If you look at this story from the children's points of view, or from the parents of the children's points of view, both Celestia and Luna are complete idiots. Yeah, if you look at this from the children's point of view, Luna is a hero and Celestia is a white witch.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works in most cases.
That's how history is written.
Yeah.
History is written by the victor.
Mm-hmm. And once again, this story is being told by the children.
Exactly.
And it's not even the complete story yet. We only gave up like bits and pieces of a greater whole. Speculation is going to run rampant, but what can I do about that?
And you also encourage a little bit of the, like you said, leave room for imagination and other
definitely.
People to
That's
talk about it.
That's not bad at all. I mean, if they can, if they want to have another ending, well, we can't really stop them, and if they like what they found, well, that all the better.
Someone pointed out in the comments, hey, I have just this idea. What about when the rest of the ponies woke up the day after in Canterlot, they found that 12 children were missing, probably forever. So they must have thought that Nightmare Moon / Luna devoured them. That's exactly what happened. The children were perfectly fine, but since they weren't seen in Canterlot again, they thought they died or they were gobbled up. So that's the first Nightmare Night, which is the title of our blog.
They assumed.
Right. So why don't we talk a little bit about some things that you obviously had some help with this project. You had a couple of people here, if I'm trying to find the name. David Larson helped you out, and Sarah Williams also helped you out. Funnily enough, we know Sarah Williams because we've had her on the show. She was helping out with Journey to the Spark, I believe, and so we've talked to her. But both of them helped you out a little bit in the intro and throughout the piece. Do you want to talk about what their roles were and what they did?
Well, David Larson composed the original soundtrack of the intro. Mm-hmm. He did an amazing job in such a short amount of time. You wouldn't believe it. The whole intro was animated and post-produced in one single week.
Your week of vacation?
Wow.
Yes. That was my vacation.
Nice.
Best vacation ever.
And the backgrounds, all the scenes that you see in that intro were painted during 2 weeks in the evenings and weekend. And David got the sound score done in one day.
Wow.
I didn't force him to do it in one day. It was just awesome. I just proposed him the idea. I was painting the Luna and Celestia glory picture. And all of a sudden, the day after, David calls and says, hey, I have the intro. Do you want to hear? What? You have what?
That's,
David Larson also lended his talents for the Devil Rainboom guys. Eat a song with Amanda Pony.
He also made all the special sound effects, like the candle and the writing and all that.
So he did a little bit of Foley work?
Cool.
Yes, he did the sound special effects. Also in one day.
Cool.
I have a lot to thanks to David Larson and as well to Sarah William. We had a lot of auditions for Gary in spite that we didn't show the animatic for the intro, we just had the script when we auditioned. So it was a very hard decision, but in between many candidates, she was, which I consider the closest to how I saw that character in my mind. And she did an awesome job. She did a very clean and bright recording, and she did several takes. I am very grateful for her, to her.
I'm gonna have to change the credits now because I just said music by David Larson for the intro. I'm gonna have to have I'm gonna have to add the sound effects and, you know, the audio mixing into it.
We will correct that in the description. I didn't notice that.
Okay, yeah, because I was sure you only did the music, and then you picked a few free samples off the net and just, well, okay, let's use that. I did not know. Sorry, David, I had no idea. I wish to put the credits back in order now.
I'm sure he realizes, and plus, the main credit was the music, so I'm sure he appreciated the credit there. And you're right, he did do a fantastic job. Both of those people helping you did a great job, especially in that intro, which I thought was a really good addition. You know, seeing the animatic, it gave a little bit more opportunity for you guys to flesh out the story, so that there wasn't too much confusion. And you also did a spectacular job. With, you know, obviously you have the little bit of animation where it's show style, but then you've got those kind of moving boards, those it's almost like a storyboards in themselves, similar to the introduction, the very first episode of My Little Pony. And those came out just spectacularly, by the way. Those were really amazing.
Thank you so much.
All credits go to my wife.
They were very hard to paint. Right, media, it's very difficult. I have been trying to do that for years. And just for the intro for this video, I got the technique like I wanted to. Yeah, it was like, nice. Phew, finally, with timing to come clear. And I wanted something like the intro of My Little Pony, but not quite a copy of that intro. Not exactly the same style. So I fleshed that a little bit more. I made it more like visual development paintings. And I gave that parchment texture and paper texture as well for the, from that book of Gary. And the main difference between the intro of My Little Pony and this one is that in this one, Gary is writing. It is not only reading it.
Right, the story is being written.
Right in place. The time.
Well, I wanted to ask one question, which I'm sure a lot of people are wondering about. But seeing as you've gone through this whole project, is there any advice that you would offer to aspiring animators or people who are looking to produce something at this level?
First of all, be organized. Keep track of whatever you do. that saved our butts more than once. Just having an Excel spreadsheet with all the shots to be done, and then separated like in storyboards, layout, color, animation, After Effects, and, you know, all of those little things, just to know where you are, and then a slight description of what each shot slash scene is going to save you a lot of trouble. The longer the video, the better, because if you're just doing like a little skit, well, okay, maybe you don't need that much, but if you intended on doing a video clip like we did, you have to have a way to stay organized, and even the spreadsheet won't be enough. You need to make sure that every symbol you have is named accordingly, so that you don't shuffle into your library trying to look for something. Keep it in order, because you're going to rage quit if you don't just stay on top of things like that. You're just going to go nuts. There's so many things that can go wrong, and the more you prepare, the better you are. We learned that in the hard way by not having some puppets at the right time, and we're not going to do the same mistake again, but we were lucky in that we didn't have any deadline. Some of you might have, or you just want to get it done over with. Even so, you still need to be organized. That's probably the biggest point I'm going to stress out. Stay organized.
If I have to say any advice, it's going to be a little bit more specific. If you're planning a big project and you want to tell a story, first of all, start small. Start smaller than this. Because you have to know your assets, like you know the back of your hand. Spend time knowing the medium and knowing every single particularity of that medium. Be flash, hand-drawn animation, whatever you are using. Start with some tests and start small. And once you know the medium and you know exactly what you are getting into, expand the project, plan your project, and 50% of the time of your project should be pre-production time. That is puppet building, scripting, storyboarding, and backgrounds.
So depending on how long it takes you to do that, you know, you have to understand that the animation, especially if you're new to it, is going to take just as long. And you know, but you're right, the preparation, a lot of people don't realize. And a lot of people have a lot of, they're very ambitious. You know, the world is filled with ambitious people, but you have to also be able to, you know, finish it.
Yeah, don't do like us. Keep the ambition slightly lower. You know, it's I'm not saying that it's bad to do like us. It's just that we put the ambition up so high that, well, I ran on empty most of the production. I spent everything at the beginning being sure that I was doing the right thing, and then suddenly it's just, no, I spent all my energy in the wrong spot, and I was struggling near the end. So that's one thing. And for those that want to animate, keep in mind that the tool is a tool. It will do some of the work for you, but not everything. Most of the work will be done by the animator, which is probably, you know, yourself, the person listening. You know, so look at the show, go frame by frame to know how, just to look how they make that head turn or the body turn on itself. Mm-hmm. That those are probably the most important cues that you're going to get. You know, getting references frame by frame is probably the best way to go about and understanding how it's done. And then practice is the other part of animation. By doing more and more, you're going to get better and better. That should go without saying, at least. And if you're using Flash, like probably most will do, you know, be wary of tweens. Tweens are evil. They help. But again, it's a tool. Yeah. So you have to know what you're doing in order for the tweens to work well. I did that at first. I overused the tweens, and I had to go back and work on it like I wanted it to work, which is removing the tweens most of the time anyway. So be wary of that. The tool is only part of the equation. You're the biggest part. Understand what you're doing.
Also, one more thing.
Yeah.
Make friends along the way, because that is going to make your project worth it. We made so many friends in this time.
Friendship is magic.
Yeah, friendship is magic. And we are so happy about the friends that we made. It's even better than the project itself.
Definitely, yes.
Well, they help us grow, and they help us finish in this project. So
Sarah Williams, David Larson, you know, even Jen from Genimation, whom we met on the Brony documentary, gave us oodles of good advice. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know how to animate, but Flash is not my favorite tool. And when he came up with some tips, I was, thank you, man. So as soon as I got out of the Brony doc, it was like, okay, I've got this and this and this and this that doesn't work. I'm going to remake it. And, you know, well, the result speaks for itself.
The real finale of the Children of the Night is not the release of the video. It's the interview with the cutie art crusaders right here. Right now.
She's telling the truth, man.
You know, it's been really exciting to have you guys back and actually have you on here. Like, I have so many questions, I just don't feel like I have time to ask them. So I've just kind of been sitting here patiently letting you guys talk. Actually, changing gears to another question here really quick that I kind of wanted to ask earlier, but I guess I'll ask it now. We mentioned, you mentioned Peter Pan in your story about how, like, he's kind of like, Luna was flying away with the fillies. During that flying scene, I did get a very, like, Peter Pan-esque feel of when he was, like, flying away with, you know, the pixie dust off to Neverland. And it felt almost like it was inspired by that. So one of my questions was, did you have any, like, deep inspirations for specific scenes or when you were animating it that were maybe, like, Disney-based or anything kind of that sort?
Every single scene in which you will see a night flight sequence, every single movie in which you see something or someone flying at night, we checked for inspiration. Everything. How to Train Your Dragon, A Whole New World from Aladdin, the Peter Pan, of course, Tinkerbell movies to see how those clouds were handled in 3D.
We also looked at All Dogs Go to Heaven for how the quadrupeds act when they're just floating.
Yep. And even more than I cannot recall right now, but every chance we got to see, okay, how this is handled.
Down Under, yes, Marahute.
The rescuers down under with the Marahute flight.
For the feathers, mainly, and also the shadows on the clouds. That was a nice inspiration, yes.
And one special note. You might notice that one shot in the night ballet has changed. and there had Luna and the Falls being very small over very monumental clouds. That inspiration came from Up.
Yeah.
From Pixar.
We figured at one point, we just realized, well, we don't have very wide-angle shots. Mm. Where could we put one?
Yeah.
And then we had recently bought a book, The Art of Pixar, and we just happened upon that shot and went, ooh, that's a good idea. We had like medium to close to, you know, slightly far shots, and then we realized that would fit perfectly there. You know, break the rhythm, just show the scope of everything with the Falls and Luna just in the back, lit by the moonlight, and then we just... this is one of the scenes that was added very later on. We didn't know until, you know, we got some
inspiration
for that. It wasn't even in the animatic. It was just suddenly, boom, that's going to be beautiful. And then, yeah, it's one of my favorite shots. I really love that shot. It's just in the back, all alone, and just led by Luna. It's just magic.
It was also the easiest shot to make of the nighttime ballet.
Probably, yes.
The easiest and one of the best.
It was the easiest for him because they are on profile, and it was the easiest for me. That background took me 1 hour.
Well, for how beautiful it was, that seems very short.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No, but on that same note, we were talking about that's one of your favorite scenes. Throughout the entire project, what are a few of your favorite scenes or scenes you're most proud of?
I am super proud of the scene in which the three Phillies go flying to the window. Because that scene is exactly what I wanted it to be. The tails, I made the tails myself, are moving like I envisioned. The atmosphere, the shooting was exactly how I wanted it. And I didn't stop for a minute until it was exactly what I wanted it to be.
Yeah, you put a lot of time in that one, and it was worth it. If I had to say I have a top three, I mean, it would start with that wide-angle shots over the monumental clouds. That's one of my favorites. The second one is probably Moon Dancer coming out of her house window and just climbing up. I love that one. Just like, she just scutters up. It's really cute. And probably the final shot where that very long shot where she just nuzzles Moon Dancer. That I love that one. It was the last shot I animated, and it's probably the one where I put the most energy into it. It was the finale, and I had to have it right. And I spent the time I had for it.
I remember the Moon Dancer scene. Do you remember that we crafted that so carefully to see, okay, she's jumping out, so she's not sure. Oh, is this a stable? Hey, it is. Oh, I'm coordinating.
That's
essentially that shot passing again.
Those are probably the shots that I'm most proud of.
That's awesome. Another thing that was one of my favorite things was just the backlighting to all the characters, because my other favorite scene was when Luna spun off into the moon. She did her spin right when she said shadows for like the last time. And then the Phillies followed her and disappeared, you know, into the moon. Like that was really well crafted.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
It was a hard one to craft, yes. It is my third favorite. And it's the longest shot. It lasts,
20 seconds.
No, it's almost a minute. It's very long. It's like one third of the whole video. Well, at least the music.
Shot 35, alias the killer in
the killer, house. Yes. And yeah, it's the one where she just does that barrel roll. In fact, the end of that barrel roll, when she disappears into the moonlight, that's all hand-drawn, except for the mane and tail, which were just added afterwards. I needed that to look good, you know? I went that far.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it turned out really well. I kept watching it over, like rewinding it and watching it just to see how, because she is in color and has the backlighting from the moon, just like the little white ring around her, and then she shifts into black when she does the spin, so I kept watching it, like her go into the black and turn into a silhouette.
Note that when Cloud passes over Luna, she has no ring light anymore in that moment.
Yeah, the backlighting just disappears because she's hidden. Well, the light is hidden from her. Those are cheats too, by the way. It's made to hide some little defects from time to time.
Yeah, we also thought about having other light sources other than ring light. And if we would have had the builds beforehand, we would have done that probably. We have one alternate shot of Moon Dancer, that we are not going to release, in which he has manually animated shadow.
Which one?
We tried with Moon Dancer to do hand-drawn animation. Do you remember?
Oh, I remember, yes. I did that layer, but it didn't work all that well. The problem is, when you hand-draw something, the chances are, if you need to have something very subtle, it's going to have a jittery line. unless your work has a super high resolution, and then you'll just go crazy over it. We did the test, and it didn't work all too well, so we decided to just use the normal lighting slash shadows that we had for the rest of the scenes. Besides, it's more consistent that way.
Right, of course.
Yeah. Well, as far as like shadows and little subtle touches go, there seemed to be a lot of really, really great ones. Everything from the stuff you did in After Effects, like the lighting effects, even like little specks of dust, everything down the little nose bubble, and I believe, was it Spirit? It was the little filly?
Spirit has a nose bubble.
And that was Spirit filly, wasn't it? Yeah. Was that supposed to be like your little filly?
Yes. That's my caricature of myself in the video. I hug a lot of camera
super,
time.
It was super cute. I forgot that that was going to be your filly, and then when I saw you with the little nose bubble and pop, I giggled. This was pretty good.
That pop was, yeah.
But there were a lot of little subtles like that. And another thing was in the very intro, the statue of Luna.
That's Fausticorn.
Lauren.
That's Lauren. That's the statue of Lauren.
Okay. There were a lot of Fausticorns. So there was that statue as a Fausticorn.
Yeah, there's
right?
a statue. There's a painting in the orphanage.
And then the
and,
painting.
That's that. Yeah. Well, that shot with the tear that comes down from the statue. Originally, it was a lot longer than that. It was a huge pan that just came from the town and then stopped on the moon. And after a while, I realized it goes way too fast to be, you know, recognizable or to just pick up on the details that's there. So after a while, I just decided to change it to something else. And I had the idea to just have the statue of Fausticorn, you know, crying. Or you can make speculations all you want. I just said, in my mind, she was crying because she somehow felt and she knew what Luna was about to do. And it would cause great harm. Even if Luna wasn't aware of it. But, you know, some say, well, it's because Faust and, you know, Lauren had to go away from the show, you know. Pretty much any speculation could be good as to why she's sad like this and why the statue cries, but that was my inspiration.
Sometimes subjectivity gives more meaning to the viewer, you know?
Yeah, and now that I'm not realizing it, we have added Lauren Faust in every animation we ever did.
Well, yeah, that's one animation we have done.
Yes, yeah. Well, together, but in every animation you have me on, Fausticorn is there. Even in the Brony Dots.
Yeah.
We put Fausticorn left and right in the Brony Dock. We hid a few things in the Brony Dock. Anyway, that's a tale for another time. But, I mean...
By we, he means him and Jan.
Yeah.
Who the what?
By we, he means you and Jan.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, we didn't mention this while we were recording the episode, but Richard Serwa actually worked on the BronyCon documentary. He was part of the animation team that did the Meet the Bronies animation along with Jan Animations and a few other awesome animators, which actually are a pretty cool fact.
Yeah.
Well, going back to the Children of the Night, were there any small little Easter eggs that maybe you'd like to point out that maybe people might have missed?
Too many.
Too many?
Correct.
Way too many.
Well, there are a few. I mean, which one would, you know, like people to just scurry for and search for? What would be nice to check frame by frame?
Yeah, maybe not telling them exactly where it is, but telling them little hints.
Yeah.
I know people love a little hide and seek or searching for things.
Very well. Look for Moon Dancer in the intro. She is on one of the paintings. Look at the orphanage drawings in the walls. Because they express a little bit of the personality.
Oh, yeah, she means over the kids' beds. In the kids' bedroom, there are drawings on the wall. Some of them are little winks, left and right.
There is...
That's where the details are. That's kind of a dead... Anyway, there's a toy, a Celestia toy, somewhere.
Oh, that's a great one.
There's a washi of Akbar.
I'm going to have to watch it and find it.
There's a minor, yes.
So on those notes, there was actually a scene I did want to point out. I have a little question kind of crafted for it. But another part, I was kind of when I was watching it and kind of watching how your scenes were put together, another thing that really hit me that struck me and I thought was really, really cool was right in the orphanage scene, you had in our first interview we talked about how you had a Fibonacci spiral, I believe is how it's pronounced,
Fibonacci
spiral in the down view shot where you're up in the rafters looking down at the orphans.
Yeah, the establishing shot of the orphanage.
There is one point that I would like to bring up.
And then it's, go ahead.
Everyone knows it's an orphanage. We never show a sign that says orphanage.
That's true. we never told anybody really out in the open in the video that it was an orphanage. Somehow they just figured it out all by themselves.
There's there's a lot of visual cues that really tie back to like old Disney cartoons of like when they show orphanages, you know.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you know, a lot of that comes from great visual kind of hints and just a way of communicating that you had to do because you couldn't use audio other than in the intro, of course. You couldn't really use people explaining what to do, and in a lot of ways, you know, that's done in every kind of medium, and it's always done better when you can explain something through visual cues. And I think that's the perfect example of something that is just explained without having to be said.
Well, it is a visual media, but yeah, sorry, Bernd, I think we cut you off there.
Oh, I was just talking about how it was looking down in the rafters, and then it cut to a camera shot that was behind that, was it a Celestia plushie or a Luna plushie?
It was a Celestia
plushie. That's Celestia.
It was a little...
Cut that out! That's the they're supposed to look for it!
Oh, Bern, you spoiled.
I'm going to spoil it because that was an amazing cut because it's in the above view and then it's in the behind view and it's in the camera and you can see it. And then it cuts to the frontal view where you can see those stuffed animals. So it places you behind them and then you can look at where the camera was placed. And I really liked that dynamic as far as how the scene was that like set up, and I thought it was really well thought out.
Well, one of the advantages.
Well, there's still an Ursa Minor.
Yes, there is.
Hidden somewhere in there, so people can find that then.
But you know, that's kind of the advantages of having a whole forking in animation. You can put the camera virtually anywhere you want, but the trick is to make it to put it in a place where it's interesting and probably not where a camera would normally be. But another one of the challenges of that was to make the backgrounds have some kind of a foreground. To me, anyway, that's something that I find kind of difficult to do. I want to give depth, but also give a sense that you're the observer, not necessarily... There's so many first-person shooter games and things out there. It's nice to just be the observer for once, and I tried to show that over there, which was the best environment to do it. There's so many little details where you can put the camera in.
Yeah, for choosing those three backgrounds, it was we did the animative, you know, the roughs, and the first key was the psychological key. So first we see the Phyllis in the lab sleeping in their beds, and you see a whole shot of the whole room, and you know where you are, and you know you are not in a pleasant place, and all of a sudden there is this light coming through the doors, coming through the bars, and the viewer gets scared. What the heck's happening? So you hide behind Celestia's plushie. And you start observing that, you are scared, you see what is coming. And you see the Phyllis reacting. And all of a sudden, you change your point of view to one of the ladders. Like, you are one following the orphanage saying, hey, where are you going? You are not supposed to do that at this time of the night.
Their kids are dead.
That's what the choice. And we used the Fibonacci spiral on those shots because they harmonized the view. It was a view with lots of angles, lots of perspective. So the key in that in those three shots was balance, and visual appealing. So your eye is directed directly to those three Phyllis all the time.
So those shots were balanced with the spiral. The rest of the video, were they balanced in any specific ways in other scenes?
It's per shot, practically. Sometimes we use the rule of thirds. One example would be... the intro. In the intro, we use the rule of the thirds to balance Gary with the candle. Gary is on the one-third of the screen, and the candle is on the opposite third. To balance the view between one and another and make it symmetrical, we used an out-of-focus. Afterwards, there are a few shots in which we use center perspective, and everything in the shots usually points towards the character that is the center of attention. Everything.
Or the moon. We try to balance the dark and the light of both the sky, the stars, the moon, and the clouds that are in there. You can't just have a huge mass of everything bright. You're just going to go blind, or you're just going to think it doesn't look really good. So the balance is in both the light, the perspective, and the elements that are in there. You kind of always have to keep in mind that there's going to be characters in there, so you can't put too many details everywhere. You're just going to confuse everyone. So balance comes there. But only when the characters are in the scene, really, that you can pinpoint where there are weaknesses and where to strengthen it.
Yeah, for example, when Luna sings along, before taking off the plaza where she is standing, Both clouds are pointing at her and leaving her enough room to move. That's the staging.
Very cool.
So now that we've seen your final project, and now that that's all been finished and done, what is next? I know we've talked last year about a number of things. We talked about the fact that this was going towards a portfolio. We talked a little bit about Heaven's Light, which was your other animatic that you had out. So in general, what's your next step, besides obviously relaxing and taking a break for a little bit to celebrate the release of Children of the Night?
Don't steal, you know, my line. I need rest. Well, we did discuss it. I mean, after all, what's now that that's done, what's next, you know? So yes, Heaven's Light is something that kind of feels that it has to be done, mainly because, well, Man the Pony gave so much time for the voice and the sound and the music in it. It just wouldn't be right to just leave it at that. But at the same time, it still needs a few revisions, and I'm not sure we're going to put up any new animatic for it anytime soon. As for the release date, I don't know if or when. So.
Well, the next step will be obviously finishing Heaven's Light, and that's my main responsibility. Many people have noticed that the animation on my intro was choppy, and they are right. That's correct. I'm going to train in animation until I am skilled enough to do Heaven's Light, and I'm not going to rest one day until I can do that all by myself.
I'm going to help you anyway.
Well, you're going to help me a little bit, but it's not going to be like Children of the Night, in which you eat 80% of the work. And I just pass the broom after you have dig the tunnel. That is not going to happen on Heaven's Light. That's for one. I'm going to revise Heaven's Light from tip to toe, because now I have a lot more of a storyboarding experience, and I know that Heaven's Light is weak at many points. So that is going to change, and the ending of Heaven's Light is going to change. Have decided it since a very long time. But it's basically that I'm going to take... Well, my break is over because I am already training animation. Jan is helping me. Richard is helping me. I'm super grateful for that. And I have been waiting 10 years of my life to learn how to animate. And now I'm having the opportunity. I'm not going to waste it. Then we're going to try and make Heaven's Light, which is going to be 100 times easier than Children of the Night, or so we think.
Less ambitious. Well, I mean, it is less ambitious, and it should come up easier, especially with the experience we have.
And we have one build for Celestia, or we have a very developed base for Celestia, which is Princess Luna.
And Discord.
And Discord. We have a puppet of Discord, a 10-point turnaround.
Well, there you go. So it seems like that'll be a little bit of an easier project, or at least, at the very least, a little bit less time-consuming.
Probably the bar is already high with what we just said, so some probably will go, well, it's not as good as the other one. It's not the same thing. They are both very different projects. While we can use the same techniques, we may not be able to, you know, to top that anytime soon. And that's, you know, one pony project. It'd be fun to just animate something that's non-pony after a while. We are animators after all, but... this one is special. It got help from the very beginning, and while we didn't mean to, we moved to something else that was slightly more inspiring for us, especially probably because of the scope that we envisioned. So, well, sorry, Mando Pony, we really wanted to do it, it's just it took a sideline for a while. But it's something that would be very beautiful to see finished.
Yeah, that's the point. I am so finishing Heaven's Light. I swear it. Next time that we see guys, we are going to have to criticize Heaven's Light.
Ah, very well then.
We'll hold you to that.
I mean, you should be able to use at least some assets, I guess, that you've collected along the way. For instance, like Celestia, you can. You said you could use Luna.
As a reference.
Your Luna puppet, but...
When I started Heaven's Light, I had very little knowledge about builds of the ponies. Now, ponies are coming out of my ears, practically.
All of the puppets.
I know those builds from hoof to ear. And I'm very sure I can make a build for young Celestia and a build for young Discord.
It's all experience. Yeah. She's very good at making puppets now, so designing... or tweaking one so that young Celestia is animatable is not probably going to be as hard a task as say, starting up on Phillies or filling out what was missing on the original Luna.
Discord, on the other hand, is going to be a headache.
I imagine.
One little question. On our last interview, we ended on a question that we wanted to have more time for, and it'd probably be the same for this. But in the spirit of our last interview, I was going to ask about the color tones in Children of the Night, because you mentioned color and color theory, and it kind of got us excited for that, because it was kind of interesting. But I had one little question, because I don't know if it's intentional. Maybe it's just a conspiracy. But when I was watching Children of the Night, I noticed that Celestia's room was a very deep shade of violet, and then when it swapped back to Luna, it was a very light shade of blue, or you know, almost a gray even, when she was like up singing in the tower. And I was curious if there was any greater thought behind the colors put into those scenes, because you seem to have a greater thought put behind all these things I never imagined could have had so much thought put into them.
We overthink a little bit. Well, yes. Okay. We are back to the colors of the night. We discussed that before. The night has very poor coloring, usually, in the realistic world. We have desaturated colors, everything. You cannot see things clearly because they desaturate and they lose depth. So, which is the most joyful and beautiful color that you can have at night? It's aquamarine. And it's an unrealistic color that happens very rarely, very, very rarely, but it's a possibility. And in contrast with that, you have violet, which is the darkest tone of the night besides black. Celestia is being shaded, Celestia is being eclipsed, and Celestia is being portrayed as the villain. I wouldn't go so far as using green and violet on Celestia's room, because Celestia is not evil per se. She's just being seen by Luna as the bad guy. So her room is more eerie. It's like not having that joy of the night in comparison to the exterior, especially when you go outside Canterlot. If you will notice that in Canterlot, the things are a lot more gray. And when you go out of Canterlot and into the clouds, especially when you ascend that column of clouds at some point, things automatically turn so bright. Things are like so much lighter and so much joyful.
Mm-hmm. Right.
At the same time.
Mm-hmm. It's not only Celestia's room, it's everything. You go from the gray, purple, and desaturated Canterlot to the joyful aquamarine backgrounds.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, Celestia's room is the same as in the show. We use a lot of reference, so while it was purple to start with, there's just a little tint that's been added to it.
But not only Celestia's room basic key is purple, also the shading of that room that we used is purple, is deep purple.
We kind of needed to make a difference between the inside and the outside, too, but I didn't know you had put so much thought into it.
Yes, I did.
That's the answer we were looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know we not only had you guys on for our third episode way back in the day, but we also brought you, Spirit, back for a color episode because of some stuff that you've talked to us. That was our episode 38, Color, where we talked a little bit more about color. So if people are more interested in color theory and a lot of the things like that, you can get a little snippet of there on our episode 38. But it seems like you were right, Bern, that there was definitely some motivation behind that difference.
When you go from the shot of Luna going to the moon with the foals, which is one of the brightest ones, and then you end the video with Celestia's room, you can get the feeling of, oh, crap. From Celestia.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That did not just happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, we are at a very long time here. We're at about an hour and a half, which, you know, I wanted to allot a little bit more time because we wanted to talk to you guys a lot, but we are kind of running out of our extra time here. So, I just wanted to ask one more question, and, you know, if there's anyone that you haven't mentioned so far, that you'd like to mention or thank on the show, then would you like to do that now?
Can we think of someone?
Yeah, there are so many people, darling. There's Grumbledet, which helped us a little bit.
If you look that far, yes.
Mm.
Well, I mean,
it's we are here and we're old.
Right. And you also mentioned Jan and Sarah and David and those who helped you out on the project.
Yeah, Baudet is the guy that did the animation analysis for My Little Pony, and he had some ideas for some plugins for Flash to help other animators. And at one point, we did contact him to get, to know if he knew any. Which plugin was it?
Actually, we contacted him to tell him about that plugin that we use for the tails and everything, and he told us about Shades, which is something that I cannot talk much about, but he's developing, and it's absolutely awesome. I recommend it to everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, if you haven't seen his videos, the analysis of My Little Pony animations, definitely go check them out, because they're fantastic.
Yeah, they're quite educational, and he does them in such a way that keeps your interest, for sure.
I agree.
I love those videos. I really love those videos. Yeah. They got me into trying to animate again. And now I'm completing training.
I just liked watching Pinkie Pie prance over and over again.
Oh, I know. That animation analysis really kind of brought to light, you know, how much thought really goes into a scene like that. With Pinkie Pie and the smile.
Yeah.
Just kind of keeping the beat with her hooves.
Yeah. And I think this interview has kind of confirmed for anyone who is questioning, you know, all of these things have so much thought put into them, more than you could ever imagine. And it really leads to the reason why these animations are so powerful and they connect with us so much. It's because so much thought is being conveyed and we're understanding the amount of thought that's put into these kind of things.
So much love to give.
Mm-hmm. And to get.
Yep.
So we'd like to thank you guys for coming on the show again. We had a wonderful time just like last time, and we will have to do this more often because you guys are just such amazing guests, and you do such amazing work as evidenced by your newly released short.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
I hope you guys get much more love on that video, and you know, obviously you'll probably have a lot of people contacting you for things, but good luck with your future projects, wherever that may lead you. I know we're all looking forward to them.
We'll do what we can, definitely.
Another small little question. Yeah. Do either of you have any plans on going to BronyCon this year?
We cannot go. Hairy question. We are in a location which is an island in Canada. And it's very unfortunate, but you cannot imagine how much plane tickets cost from this location to anywhere else.
Should see if any bronies are willing to let you use their boat.
Yeah, well, if, you know, the sailor brony comes and takes us in his fishing boat, we will be so grateful.
I don't know, is there a brony cruise?
maybe. All right,
something to do in the future.
Anyway, yeah.
So obviously, we talked last time about how people could contact you, and you have your first nightmarenight.blogspot.ca. But now that you've kind of moved on from that project, do you want to just kind of tell people where they can find out more about you, the progress of your animations, and just in a way be able to contact you? Where could they do that?
First Nightmare Night is going to keep open. It's not going to cover the progress of Heaven's Light because we have concluded after a long time that the best procedure to manage this is to release the product and then to release the animatic. If done otherwise, we find ourselves in a situation in which people want the product and we cannot always provide.
What she means is that we just boost expectations to something that we don't know what the end result will necessarily be. And then, well, we got lucky on this one after a year. And, well, we may not be able to repeat the same feat. So it won't probably be the same. However, I don't know. There's probably going to be a blog about it. However, probably not as in-depth or showing as much like an animatic, for example. Right. But yes, First Nightmare Night will stay online so that people can see. And, well, the emails are all there, so we can still get contacted.
No, okay. So that that'd be the best place to have people go to.
We'll still be reachable, and one day, out of nowhere, surprise, Heaven's Light.
that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, that's like. Do you remember us? we were the guys who made the video, which is just next to this one. So
it's like, oh, well, yeah, yeah, right, right.
Insert Pinkie Pie gasp there.
All right. Well, thank you guys for coming on the show again. It was wonderful having you on, and we would love to do it again in the future, perhaps when you finish Heaven's Light.
Yay! Maybe. It was wonderful being here, and I so finished that.
It was wonderful having you.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
Likewise.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
So thank you guys for coming on, and we'll have to have you on in the future. And I guess that's it for this episode. So this week, we have something a little bit special for you guys, people who have listened to the podcast for a while now. We've been wanting to start up our own channel to be able to do bonus material and a bunch of other things like that. And this week, we decided to spend the time and just kind of get that up and running. So in addition to all of our other plugs, which will be on the screen, you'll see at the top here that we've also got a YouTube channel now, which is youtube.com/QDRCrusaders. And so just to give like a quick 2-minute rundown, that channel is going to be there. So we'll post a video every single week letting you guys know that the episode will be up on EFN's channel, obviously. We'll just post a little reminder so you can subscribe to there to get those reminders. But we'll also be posting a lot of extra stuff. Things such as spoiler casts or Q&As and a bunch of other things like that. Individual shows that we've always wanted to do for a while that have to do with art. All that kind of stuff. Whenever we have an idea, we were thinking of posting it to that channel. So if you guys want to support us some more, just go ahead and subscribe to youtube.com/QDRCrusaders. And basically, depending on the response, we'll start posting there and doing some extra
we're
stuff.
We're not leaving Everfree Network or anything like that. Yep. Our episodes are still going to be airing and then uploading to Everfree Network. It was just when we did things like spoiler casts or want to do extra content, it became problematic because the episodes became huge. So if people do want to see extra content, we will be posting it there instead of adding it to the end of an episode.
And also reminders for when the episodes go up. That is a big thing too.
Yes.
So that's our new YouTube channel.
So if you do subscribe to that, you will get a little video basically whenever we have an episode uploaded to Everfree. I guess it's Everfree Radio on YouTube with a link to the actual episode.
Yeah. So definitely check that out if you're interested. Yep. We would love to have you subscribe and give us feedback on that kind of stuff. All the other plugs are on the screen. You know, we've got Twitter, Facebook, DeviantArt. You can follow us there. Email us if you want to. All that kind of fun stuff. But that's it for this episode. Thank you guys for watching. I'd like to extend one more thanks for Spirit and Lion for coming on the show one more time. You were wonderful to have.
Yes.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, indeed.
Definitely.
And that's everything for this week. So thank you guys for watching, whether or not you're on the live stream or on YouTube. We love you all the same. My name is Rainbow Plasma.
I'm Brendo1.
I'm Flutterguy317.
Spirit.
And Lion.
Hey.
And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Love you all.